One of the cool things about being a mammal is that mothers can feed their babies from their own bodies. But even something completely natural can be a source of some societal upheaval. A majority of women did not breastfeed their babies in America 2 generations ago. That has changed, but there are still occasional dust-ups and outrages over women breastfeeding in public and strong reactions to those incidents. We'll discuss breastfeeding from several angles in this hour and invite you to join in. Kristen J. Wilson wrote the book Others Milk, The Potential of Exceptional Breastfeeding. Kristen chairs the anthropology department at Cabrillo College in Aptos, California. Kristen Wilson, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Two other guests join us. Laura Mojica is a lactation specialist in private practice in Fortuna. Laura, welcome to you.
Good morning.
And Karina Scoff is with us as well. She's a lactation consultant as well and breastfeeding coordinator for Jackson County WIC, Women, Infants, Children. Karina, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And so let us start with you, Kristen Wilson. The story in the book Others Milk starts in an unexpected place with a 10-year-old boy feeding breast milk to his foster sister. What did you set out to cover in the book?
Well, what I was looking at were people who felt like their breastfeeding fell outside of the norm. And I discovered that folks define breastfeeding in different ways. So some consider nursing a child at the breast or the chest to be breastfeeding or chest feeding, as some call it, even if there's no milk. So this is sometimes called comfort feeding. Or even if they're providing formula in a bag around their neck that has a tube leading to the nipple. And others told me that they were breastfeeding because they were giving their children breast milk that they pumped from their bodies or that maybe was donated by other lactating individuals. So I set out to explore what is that experience of exceptional breastfeeding, and when it doesn't fit the norm, how do people who engage in this sort of breastfeeding feel about it, and what is their journey like?
And when you say exceptional breastfeeding, what do you mean?
Talking really about those variety of definitions that people gave me. So at first I was thinking maybe people who induced lactation, like adoptive mothers or parents via surrogacy. But when I put out a call for participants, what I ended up getting was hundreds and hundreds of emails for people that said, hey, what I'm doing falls outside the norm. So I think it's a really broad definition, exceptional breastfeeding. It means different things to different people. But for the sake of my book, I really looked at folks who were breastfeeding in ways that would maybe be surprising to the general public.
Okay, so definitely exceptional in the sense of the exception, not the rule. This is a
exactly.
Bit outside what people would consider the norm. Okay, mm-hmm. Exceptional breastfeeding defined. Let me bring in Karina Scaff and Laura Mojica. And Karina, can you give us a sketch on what you do to help mothers breastfeed in your official role with Jackson County WIC?
Yes, I'm a breastfeeding peer support counselor coordinator, and we provide prenatal education to moms and their families and also postpartum help, because along with what the author said, all moms sometimes have troubles and need extra support.
And Laura Mojica, you're in private practice, not quite a public thing like what Karina's doing, but give us a sketch on what you did to help mothers breastfeed.
Well, I actually am in private practice and am employed at Redwood Memorial Hospital in Fortuna. So I teach prenatal education mm-hmm. and do prenatal lactation visits for women there in the hospital, as well as see mothers after they've had their babies in the first two to three days of life. And then I see mothers and their babies on an outpatient basis. I think the oldest breastfeeding kiddo I've had was about 9 months old in my private practice through a pediatrician's office that I work at here. So I see the whole spectrum of breastfeeding babies.
So as you hear the discussions of exceptional breastfeeding, as Kristen Wilson defined it, are you seeing more things like that over time, Laura?
Absolutely. You know, I see a cluster of women who, have problems providing enough milk for their child, or maybe they fall outside of the social norms, like they're wanting to milk share with another female partner,
maybe share some breastfeeding duties that way, or actually see a good number of women who do mother-to-mother donated breast milk, where they're just doing informal milk sharing amongst friends, or sometimes they've met up through, you know, like a Facebook group or a breastfeeding mothers group, something like that. So I think that, you know, our definition of breastfeeding or chest feeding needs to be very broad to kind of catch all of these people in the net and give them the credit they deserve for how hard they work to feed their babies.
Corina Scaff, this concept of milk share and people giving milk to babies that is not from the mother of that baby, is this widely supported by at the official level?
Well, we support moms and milk sharing. What we do, though, is encourage them to have their donors screened, because there are certain things that can be passed through mother's milk, and we want to make sure that the baby is receiving healthy milk. And then also, we really discourage milk sharing through the internet, because a lot of the milk has been tainted and not really breast milk as well.
Really? Okay. Well, Kristen Wilson, you did find people sharing through the internet, didn't you?
Yes. One of the things that I noted, folks who found each other through the internet still did a number of things to screen that milk. One thing that folks would do is establish a relationship with that person online, meet them in person sometimes, also meet them, even though online, still have kind of a network that vouched for them. Another way to go is to not just interview them, but ask them to complete some screening. So some of them will have some sorts of health screening. Other people got milk off the internet and had the milk itself screened. And another possibility is flash pasteurizing the milk at home. Mm-hmm. And so I encountered people who would do that. And another thing is...
Hang on, let's bring the other thing to the other side of a break, Kristen, because we have to go there now. Mm-hmm. The book is called Others Milk, The Potential of Exceptional Breastfeeding. And we have Laura Mojica and Corina Scaff, two lactation consultants, with us as well. Back on The Exchange in 1 minute. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. The topic today is breastfeeding, a very wide-ranging discussion of breastfeeding, because it can mean a lot of things, as Kristen Wilson explores in her book, Others Milk, The Potential of Exceptional Breastfeeding, as in breastfeeding that isn't necessarily the rule, but the exception to it. You know, people who are chest feeding or using formula but at the breast, all those sorts of things. Lots of variations in here that Kristen uncovers in the book. She's the chair of the Anthropology Department at Cabrillo College in Aptos. And we also have with us Laura Mojica and Corina Scaff. Laura is a lactation specialist in private practice in Fortuna, also works in a hospital. Corina Scaff is a lactation consultant and the breastfeeding coordinator for Jackson County WIC. They're both board certified lactation specialists. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. And Kristen, we were talking before the break about milk sharing and establishing relationships. And you even talked about flash pasteurizing. There was another point you were getting up to when I had to stop you.
Yeah, I think that one thing that we could recognize, at least from the folks that I interviewed, is that they do often spend quite a bit of time getting to know each other before they receive milk from someone else, and also before they donate it. Oftentimes, donors want to know where their milk is going. It takes a lot of work to pump milk often. Sometimes we're talking about just an extra stash of milk in the freezer, but other times it's donors who are especially pumping their milk for a needy family who cannot provide enough milk to their infant for some reason or another.
Let's talk in real general terms now and come back and just sort of reset the whole framework here, because the numbers you point out in the book are, they were surprising, to put it mildly. The low point of breastfeeding in American society in 1972, it was down to 22%. What's it up to now?
Over 80.
Okay. So all right, so things have flipped around numerically. Is society still hard on women who do not breastfeed then?
Are you asking me, Kristen?
Yes, Kristen.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways they are. I could talk about one thing in particular that I learned from the folks who I interviewed. I made a point to talk to people who were breastfeeding, who were transgender or who were not feminine identified, some who told me they were butch identified. And one thing that I learned from them is that they had a number of strategies from disentangling gender from breastfeeding, because we have this sense, I think, in general in our society that breastfeeding is one of the most feminine things you can do. It really confirms one's womanliness for a lot of people, and that's a legitimate experience. But when somebody doesn't have a sufficient supply or breastfeeding goes awry in one way or another, they're not just upset about not being able to feed their baby. They told me that they felt like they were failures as women. So I think maybe disentangling the idea that it is a confirmation of your adequacy as a woman is a good idea for us.
So for our other two guests, for Laura, let's start with you. I mean, in working with women who just don't feel like they're putting out enough, I mean, how do you console them?
Well, it's a difficult conversation usually when a woman comes to me with, you know, struggles with low supply. And so we really have to figure out how we can make breastfeeding work for that person. You know, it might look like breastfeeding at the breast for a while, followed up with formula supplementation via a bottle because that's what that baby needs to grow. It might look like breastfeeding, you know, feeding at the breast with a little feeding tube that's supplying formula or donor milk. It might look like stopping breastfeeding and supporting a mother to formula feed her baby if that's what she needs. Or it might look like supporting her to exclusively pump for her baby, which, let me tell you, is a super hard job, much harder than just breastfeeding alone. And so we really try to maximize, you know, the amounts we can get into a baby with a mom who has low supply and remind her that breastfeeding is about a relationship with your baby. They get, you know, immune protective factors. They get love and comfort and security by being held close and cared for in that manner. And so we can take away the caloric component of it and make it about more of the relationship and the good things that they're doing for their baby and not like what their body is not able to do.
Karina Scaff, I want to ask about the caloric component, though, and the other, just the just focus on the nourishment, the nutrition that the babies get from breastfeeding. What's in the breast milk that's so good for them?
There's thousands of things in the breast milk, and we're still learning all of the intricacies of what's in human milk. And a lot of people don't realize that it's a live substance. If you look at human milk under a microscope, you're going to see movement and action happening, and that's because it's alive. It carries antibodies, it carries protective factors for your baby, and so you have to treat milk with respect, because when you pump your milk, it's a live substance, and you can do harm if you to these live substances if you don't treat the milk appropriately. And I just wanted to say that 97% of our Jackson County WIC moms initiated breastfeeding in 2017. So that's really incredible, 97%. And we serve 44% of the population in Jackson County who are pregnant. So we're really excited that that the numbers are rising and women are initiating breastfeeding.
Is that 97% an all-time high figure or something?
It's. I think we've been at 98% mm-hmm. before, but that's quite an accomplishment.
So you're staying consistently high. So, Karina, when you talk about treating the milk appropriately, what do you mean?
Oh, we don't recommend microwaving it to reheat it, that it needs to be frozen if you're not going to use it right away. And then when you need to be sterile. So the women who are milk sharing, real important, they know that they have to, you know, wash their hands and then sterilize their pumping equipment so that they're not passing on any bacteria or anything like that.
We are talking about breastfeeding here on the Jefferson Exchange with three guests. Kristen Wilson is the chair of the anthropology department at Cabrillo College, wrote a book called Others' Milk, The Potential of Exceptional Breastfeeding. We also have with us two lactation specialists, Laura Mojica from private practice at a hospital in Fortuna. Karina Scaff is the breastfeeding coordinator for Jackson County WIC. Here is a phone call from Daniel in Wairika. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, thanks for taking my phone call. I just wanted to comment a bit on the milk sharing. My wife and I have twins that are 2.5 now, but when they were 5 months old, my wife was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer, and she had to undergo chemotherapy immediately. And my wife was a member of several Facebook groups on breastfeeding and just being a twin mom and things like that. And after sharing her story in those groups, she was able to make contact with a woman in Pennsylvania who was producing exceptional amounts of breast milk, more than her one child needed. So she was able to freeze a lot of it and ship it out to us in California. And it was just a really monumental benefit for our family that our children who were born premature were still able to get this very nutritious mother's milk that was full of antibodies and the such.
That's amazing. And how is your wife doing, Daniel?
She's doing well now, thank you. There's no sign of the cancer, and she's 2 years out from her diagnosis.
Oh, good. Thank you for sharing that story with us. And Kristen Wilson, I want to ask you about that, because this is a familiar story for people who've read your book, is the idea that people will go to some extraordinary lengths to share breast milk.
Yes. Many donors work really hard to connect their milk to people who need it. And one of the motivators for a lot of the donors that I talk to is that they were once recipients of breast milk. When they had an earlier child, when they had trouble with breastfeeding, and then later, when they had later children and were able to produce excess milk, then they really wanted to give back. And I want to say that many of these exceptional breastfeeders sharing milk, those inducing lactation, those wet nursing with friends, and so on, they go online oftentimes to seek support, like the caller mentioned. And a real positive out of this is that it turns breastfeeding from what can be an isolating experience to a more communal one. And I really like seeing that. It feels much better, I think, for those engaged in it.
Laura, do you deal with people in the hospital, in particular in that setting of putting groups of women together so they can get to know each other and share at least talk of breast milk, if not breast milk itself?
Yeah, we do have some breastfeeding groups here in Humboldt County. You know, our is pretty large. You could drive maybe 4 hours to get from the southern end to the northern end, east to west. So they're a little bit more geographically isolated in the larger urban areas like Eureka and Arcata, but we do have quite a few breastfeeding or postpartum support groups where mothers get together, and that's really just for them to not have to breastfeed in isolation, for them to be able to share their stories and their difficulties and kind of, what sort of things that they're going through at that point in time. And I think that it's also important for women to see other women or other people breastfeeding or chest feeding, because, this is not something, it's natural, it's instinctive, but it's not something that everyone just knows how to do right off the bat. And so I often encourage pregnant women to go to a postpartum support group to see other women or see other people feeding their babies so that they have some kind of idea how it will work once their baby gets here.
Karina Scaff, I wonder if breastfeeding training of some sort, or at least some information, required to be given to WIC recipients?
No, we offer it to all of our WIC pregnant women, and then they can choose to either come or not. But we really encourage them to come, because I always say an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, and just by knowing what to expect can be helpful, but also too much knowledge can be scary as well. So we try to keep a good medium, and just want to offer support prenatally and postpartum. We do offer postpartum gatherings as well for moms. And I know here in Southern Oregon, a couple of our pediatricians' offices offer support and also a couple of our hospitals.
We are talking about breastfeeding here on the Jefferson Exchange. Three guests. Karina Scaff is the Jackson County WIC breastfeeding coordinator and a lactation consultant. Laura Mojica, also a lactation specialist, both of them board certified. Laura works in private practice in Fortuna and works at a hospital in Humboldt County. And we have with us as well Kristen Wilson, chair of the anthropology department at Cabrillo College in Aptos and the author of a book, Others Milk, The Potential of Exceptional Breastfeeding. You can join us on the Exchange, 800-838-3760 by phone, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Kristen, you ask a very simple question in the book, which is, why does breastfeeding continue to be so fraught? Did you come up with a satisfactory answer to that question?
I think that there are multiple things going on, but one issue is that as a society, we have a very odd relationship with the female breast. And, you know, as everyone is well aware, it's a sexualized body part, and it is accentuated in advertisements and so forth. And so I think that that is linked up with the discomfort on the part of some people in public with breastfeeders breastfeeding in public. The other issue is simply that we are really into mother blaming and kind of uptight about parenting. A lot of people think they know how parenting should go and think that that is a public conversation rather than, you know, something that happens within someone's family and community, but rather we have a lot to say about how other people should go about their business of parenting. And so I think those two things together work to make parents who are breastfeeding feel very insecure sometimes.
And I imagine the internet, while it helps connect mothers who are trying to share milk, it probably also connects people who want to complain about breastfeeding, either pro or con.
Yeah, you know, you get the ridiculous comments about how, urinating is natural. You don't see me doing that in public, which, of course, the two things are completely different. But still, breastfeeders are exposed to these kinds of conversations and sometimes get a lot of support when they're out in public and other times are not. Sometimes even in private, I talked to a number of people whose family members chastise them for breastfeeding in the living room in front of the father-in-law or in front of the visiting guests. And that can make it really hard to continue one's breastfeeding, particularly as the child gets older and people start to look a little askance at the breastfeeding of a toddler, for instance.
Let me explore this with the two lactation consultants, Karina and Laura. Laura, how much is your work involved with preparing women not just for the action of breastfeeding, but for societal responses?
We actually talk about that a good amount in prenatal classes and sometimes postpartum. It's really hard postpartum because women who've just had babies, I kind of liken their ability to take in new information as like throwing the spaghetti at the wall and seeing if one of them sticks because it's done, right? So I might throw a bunch of information at them and maybe 5% of it is going to actually stick in their brains. So, but we do talk about a little bit about like accidental holiday weaning or holiday plugged ducts or mastitis. It is an actual thing that happens where women are, they're feeding their babies and then they're passing the baby around the room, or they might feel like, oh, I have to go somewhere to feed my baby because I have family members or, friends present and I don't want them to see me doing this, right? And so they might accidentally end up weaning their baby or letting their breast get too full and having like a clogged duct or a mastitis. So Thanksgiving and Christmas tend to be kind of hot and heavy periods for me with seeing women actually with clogged ducts or wanting to know how to increase their milk supply because of those reasons.
You make sure your phone is nearby and charged, I imagine, during those holidays.
Yeah, because you might get trapped. We call it nap trapped after a feeding baby. So the baby feeds and then falls asleep, and then you can't move. You're nap trapped.
Okay. Karina, how much do you explain to people as you have them through about the societal implications of breastfeeding too?
Well, prenatally, in our gatherings. We actually have one gathering that is all towards protecting their experience, their lactation experience, whether that be through their work environment or neighbors, home environment, public. And then we also have it, we discussed it just last week at our postpartum chat. And one lady just said, you know, I'm going to breastfeed. And if they don't want to see it, they can leave the room, you know. So they get pretty animated sometimes and very supportive of each other. So if you're a breastfeeder out there and you're feeling like you're alone, I really encourage you to go and seek support. There is support groups out there if you need it.
All right. Lots of lactation consultants out there to consult as well. Karina Scaff is one. She's with the Jackson County WIC program. She's the breastfeeding coordinator there. Laura Mojica, a lactation specialist in private practice in Fortuna, also offers some programs through a hospital there. And Kristen Wilson is the anthropology department chair at Cabrillo College in Aptos. She wrote the book Others Milk, The Potential of Exceptional Breastfeeding. We'll come back with all three of those guests and take phone calls and emails from you if you'd like to join us when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are talking about breastfeeding from several different angles today, physical, philosophical, societal, lots of places to go with this. Kristen Wilson is one of our guests. She chairs the anthropology department at Cabrillo College in California. Her book is called Others Milk, The Potential of Exceptional Breastfeeding. Many different ways to think of breastfeeding, as she points out in the book. We have with us two lactation consultants as well, Laura Mojica from Humboldt County and Karina Scaff from Jackson County. And you can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. And a call here from Al in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange, where we're talking about breastfeeding.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I don't know how my comments are going to be relative to your discussion, but I just want to mention, like in the Islamic holy book, which is the Quran, speaks of women have the choice to breastfeed up to 2 years. That's one thing. The second is that the mother who shares her milk with other babies, they become her children. So the baby she shared the milk with become the brothers and the sisters of her own children, legally. I just thought I would mention that.
So do you see the Quran as then encouraging women to share breast milk?
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely.
Okay. Al, thanks for sharing the perspective. Very much appreciate that. So, Kristen Wilson, that seems to work with what you have uncovered in talking with lots of people for Others Milk.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I did talk to a number of Muslim women who were breastfeeding and sharing breastfeeding. They spoke to their clerics, their imams, about their choices of breastfeeding. I talked to some who were adoptive parents, and they received much encouragement from their religious leaders for that milk sharing. And it was interesting to me because just as Al the caller said, that makes those children her children. It makes those children also milk siblings. And so they grow up oftentimes knowing that their mother's each other's mothers breastfed them. And so it produces a different kind of relationship. And I think it's good for Americans from other groups to imagine this because it's a way of thinking about sharing milk and sharing breastfeeding as a way of strengthening community connections, building communities through breastfeeding instead of having it siloed into everyone's individual households. And I also talked to a number of Mormon women who had the same sort of thing where it was very common to be at a church function and a child walk by who happens to need some milk and somebody's lactating. They just pick that child up and breastfeed him without maybe even knowing who their mother is.
So you know, Al raises a great point here, which makes me wonder about some of the other sacred texts that religions hold dear, and whether they are speaking about breastfeeding as well.
Yeah, I'm not an expert on all religions, but I do know that religion is important to some breastfeeders, particularly some of the exceptional breastfeeders that I talk to, and having that support from their religious community influenced how they went about their breastfeeding relationships.
Now, so one of the things you point out...
It's believed in Christianity that Jesus was breastfed until he was three.
All right. I was going to ask about that angle of it, because Al mentioned that the Quran said that breastfeeding is okay until two. And what is the official point of view from lactation specialists like yourselves? Karina, you started this.
The American Academy of Pediatrics and the World Health Organization recommend that babies are breastfed for a year to 2 years, and then as long as mutually desired. So they want you to at least breastfeed for at least 1 to 2 years, mm-hmm. and then for as long as the mom and the baby mutually feel like they want to breastfeed.
And Laura Mojica, is there a point at which the baby does, well, by this point they're a toddler, just sort of get bored of it or just doesn't particularly want it or need it anymore?
They say that historically the weaning age was probably somewhere around 6 or 7 years old. And I think the oldest kiddo I've ever seen breastfeeding was a 5-year-old. So I'm assuming, you know, most people, by the time their kids get to be about 3 or 4, they go through some sort of natural weaning process. And there's probably a handful of people out there who breastfeed their kids longer than the age of 4 or 5. But again, as long as both are into it and agreeable, then it's not a problem.
Kristen Wilson, you say in Others Milk that the breastfeeding relationship is more about intra-actions than interactions. What is the distinction there?
I think what I was writing about there was that relationship that Laura was just mentioning between the mother and the child. And also, there are other people that are involved, so other family members and the breastfeeding individual, other family members in the child, they all have something to do with that relationship. And I think that if we just think about the breastfeeder and the child, there's a lot of negotiation that happens. And I know the lactation consultants can speak a lot to what all is involved as far as frequency of nursing and cues for time to nurse, cues for time to wean, how they are going to hold the child, and how they might even negotiate tandem nursing when there are siblings who are nursing as well, for instance. So that's really what I was getting at there, is that it is a complicated relationship and many are weighing in. And in speaking about the age at weaning, I did interview 3 people who were nursing their child at age 7. And in all 3 cases, they had some unique reasons why. In one case, the child was developmentally delayed in many ways. In another case, the child had, they found out that she was going blind day by day and that breastfeeding helped orient her to the world. So they continued to breastfeed for that reason. And then the third case was a child who had been adopted from an orphanage in China, who was subsequently abused in her adoptive family and then removed by Child Protective Services. And she asked to start breastfeeding at age 5. This was a child who wouldn't let anyone near her, wouldn't let anyone touch her. And when she asked to breastfeed, the adoptive mother was not sure if that was an okay thing to do. She sought out information about it, heard that people do this, that children who have been through a lot of trauma might start breastfeeding at a much older age, and so she went ahead and did it. And it was a very satisfying experience for everyone. And speaking of intra-actions, I was able to meet that child who breastfed, who started at that late age, and she was 11 or 12 and really well-adjusted by that time.
We have an email here from Constance. I don't see a town here. She says, I breastfed my daughter well into first grade. It felt like a natural bonding experience, though she didn't want the fact to be shared with her peers and still doesn't. Mm-hmm. She's now 19 in college and has always been a lovely, bright, secure, kind, and giving person. I know there's no way to judge cause and effect in this situation, but I have always felt that it had much to do with her becoming a great person. We had a little inside joke that she would stop when she could do it standing up. Thanks for this show, says Constance. All right, so appreciate that. Thoughts from you, Kristen?
Yeah, I think that really resonates with many of the folks that I interviewed, that breastfeeding well beyond an age that we expect can be just a great experience for all of those involved. And just like Laura said, as long as all of the participants are still willing and interested, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's not really anyone else's business.
So let's talk about go back to what was going on when women were not nursing. We've established that in 1972, the rate of breastfeeding was down to 22%. It's over 80% now from what Kristen tells us in the book. So people were using a lot of baby formula in those low years. And I wonder, Laura Mojica, if lactation consultant has been a growth industry over the past two, three, four decades.
Yeah, I mean, lactation consultants weren't really a thing until the early 80s. So that kind of tells you something about the resurgence of breastfeeding that happened in the early to mid 80s. So, you know, we still see the effects, though, of formula marketing. You know, women who sign up for a pregnancy website, or maybe they register on a maternity clothing website and they start getting cans of formula unsolicited in the mail. That actually happened to me when I was breastfeeding one of my kids, so I know that it happens all over the United States. So I think that big, you know, resurgence of breastfeeding has not been able to knock down the insidious marketing that happens with, you know, formula companies, not only in the United States but all over the world.
Corina Scaff, WIC is very much about nutrition. So what kinds of things do you tell people who are wondering about the benefits of breast milk versus formula?
Well, we do a lot of participant-centered education, and a lot of our clients or participants are really well-informed and already come up with things like it helps increase we actually are coaching them that breastfeeding is the norm, so anything that isn't the norm is then an adverse effect. So a child that is breastfed is going to have the norm outcome. So a child that isn't breastfed or given as much breast milk is going to have at risk for higher risk for leukemia, higher risk for diabetes and those types of things. So we just really try to talk about how it's going to affect them individually, too, and the benefits for them. They like usually say bonding. We talk about cost effectiveness, less doctor's visits.
So a real set of changes over the course of a lifetime, as our email pointed out as well.
The benefits for women too, or the risks for women who don't breastfeed. We talk about that as well.
Kristen Wilson, you write about Mayor Bloomberg in New York asking maternity wards to lock up formula so that people would concentrate on breast milk. And he got a sharp reaction, which was what?
A number of things. There are people who feel like that is a little bit too paternalistic, and that, you know, the litany of benefits for breastfeeding, you know, undeniable benefits, can be quite traumatic to those folks who cannot breastfeed for some reason or another. For example, I talked to a number of women who had experienced sexual abuse in their lifetimes and couldn't bear to have their child at the breast. And so every time they hear that there are horrible risks that they're taking for their babies for not breastfeeding makes them feel even worse. And so from that perspective, locking up formula on the one hand is a really a way of making up for what Laura called the insidious marketing of formula, which is really problematic. I mean, our media images of feeding babies is usually bottles if we're watching a TV show or movie or whatever.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But it's also quite difficult for those who can't breastfeed when they hear that they're putting their child at risk. So I think trying to find a balanced approach and really listening to people's experiences so that it doesn't feel like shaming. And the other thing I want to say is that breastfeeding is not exactly free. Don't have to go to the store to buy formula, but you do need time off work or you need somebody to help around the house. You need the circumstances in which to pump or the ability to leave to nurse that baby if you're going to keep the supply up. And we are so highly stratified in our society and the work world, too, with who has access to that kind of flexibility and who doesn't.
Okay, so we still need to provide some room, you're saying, for people to be able to do what comes naturally to mothers.
Right. And it's so difficult because the formula pushing has historically been really dangerous for people's reaching their own breastfeeding goals. But there is a reality of people who do not find it very easy to make breastfeeding look the way that they really had wanted it to, and they have to use some formula.
All right. We've learned a lot today. The book is called Others Milk, The Potential of Exceptional Breastfeeding by Kristen Wilson at Cabrillo College. We also had with us Laura Mojica, lactation specialist in private practice in Fortuna. Karina Scaff, who is the Jackson County WIC breastfeeding coordinator, also a lactation consultant. Thank you all for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.